Hey everyone, welcome back to a brand new episode of Techish Podcast.
We back.
One half of your hosting duo, Abadesi of Hustle Crew here, joined
the
with...
other half, Michael Payne, CEO of Pocket. Let's go.
I'm going to start with a story that takes us all the way back to 2020.
Damn.
Yeah, so 2020, we talked about virtual influencers.
Yes.
In the context of virtual blackface, digital blackface, this idea of like white creators hiding behind black images, profiting from black images. And the specific example that we were using was Shudu. So Shudu is a dark-skinned AI avatar that's done campaigns with luxury brands like Prada, the creation of a cis white guy based in the UK and his design agency. So at the time I spoke about how disturbing I find this. You know, we're living in a world with ethnicity pay gaps. If you look at the reports from organizations like 7/6 Agency on the influencer pay gap, it's actually wild how much less black influencers are paid than white influencers for the same campaign. And we've covered on this show before as well how like black creators will often like create a new trend or create a new meme only for white creators to then popularize it and get all the accolades and the acclaim. So I just find this really disturbing. Also because I personally like to put money in the black economy. So when I see black faces in black campaigns, I'm like, wow, I really want to support that because I feel like that money is going to go back to that creator. Mm. And that makes me excited. So to me, it just felt so icky that Shudu, one of the most recognizable dark-skinned black faces, is actually an image owned by a white man. I found that really weird.
Some plantation shit.
Shudu was back in the news recently. So the creator says that since the launch of Shudu and the critique that he faced, he didn't call us out, which I felt was quite rude, he's decided to think more ethically about how to use Shudu and other black images. He hasn't stopped using them. For the record. So in this news piece, he got one of the models who he uses to help create Shudu to speak up and say that she's very happy to be a part of this process because, you know, she is getting paid. But I guess my question for you is, gatekeepers, why do people still insist on inserting themselves into equations when they could actually just like step out of the scene? Like,
it's just this capitalism,
guy doesn't
though,
need
it?
To be there.
It's capitalism. He saw an opportunity to make money. He saw a gap in the market and he went for it. I think now the current thing he's doing is he's basically doing a profit split for his new models. So basically, if you're a black model that works for him to create a new model, you get a revenue share and a profit split basically. So he's not completely got the ownership, but it's like a, you know, diffuse off ownership model. But at the same time, listen, I want to say congratulations to you because I feel like you, with the clips that you did that went viral multiple times, some of them got like a million views. You went on Al Jazeera to talk about it. That was, I think, the primary driver behind the backlash that made him say, listen, I've got to start paying people more. Thanks. I've got to start giving up ownership to these other people.
Yeah.
So the work that you did on the show and on Al Jazeera probably, to me, has put more money in the pockets of black women and has probably made that person feel shame, whatever his name is. So yeah, shout out to you. We're gonna put a fake round of applause. Woo!
But we still need to call out the gatekeepers because, you know, sometimes as a diversity and inclusion consultant, I will be approached by like a white company and they'll be like, oh, we offer these kinds of events or we offer this kind of training and we keep being asked to do anti-racism stuff. We keep being asked to create pro-black content. But, you know, obviously we're not able to do that. And what they mean is we have no black people in our team, so we can't do that. Yeah. Or we have no black women in our team, so we can't do that. And they're like, we're just wondering, like, is there a way that we can like collaborate or partner so that, you know, there's a way that we can work on this together? And I'm like, why don't you just introduce me to this person? But they still want to own a piece of it.
Yeah.
Like the idea of just giving an opportunity completely to a black person, the greed and the sense of entitlement is just so infuriating and so disgusting. People are aware of the lack of like black wealth. People are aware of the lack of black generational wealth. People are aware of the like systemic and individual prejudice that black people constantly face. And yet when they have an opportunity to embolden and empower black people, they still feel like they deserve a slice. Honestly, man, it just drives me mad.
Yeah, I hear you. On a separate note, the Oscars happened and Oppenheimer swooped all the awards, basically won 7 awards.
Yeah.
Apparently Christopher Nolan has made 100 mil from Oppenheimer based on bonuses. I think he got paid 20 mil up front and then he ended up, because of box office performance, Oscar bonus, he ended up making 100 mil. Listen, do you think it's obscene though for a director to make that much? I mean, he was also the producer of the movie.
Yeah.
Do those numbers feel obscene, or is that, listen, it's a performance-based contract, he performed, he made a great movie, a lot of people enjoyed it, stop hating?
what I like about Christopher Nolan is that he works with his wife, which I just have so much respect. Mm. Like, I didn't realize she's his producer.
Yeah. And his brother. He's also co-written with his brother a lot of stuff as well.
The other thing I find really interesting is like, yo, I'm not throwing shade on Oppenheimer because Oppenheimer is a great film. I don't think it's his best film.
What's his best film then?
I mean, for me, I was going to say Interstellar, but I really hated the ending. So I'm actually just going to settle on Inception.
Why'd you hate the ending of Interstellar?
So cheesy.
The answer is love. No, yeah.
But I just, for me, Interstellar would have been a 10 out of 10 film if they'd never made it back. Like if when they were in the Tesseract, some kind of wild stuff happened and Matthew McConaughey's head popped off and ended up in somewhere else. Yeah. And then like, you know, they were reformed with like limbs going all gnarly. Like that for me would have made it more like realistic. Because I think life isn't happy endings. Life is like just getting to the end. And hoping you can, you know,
yeah, because when he gets blown into the Tesseract, I thought, okay, that's it, he's dead. Not right? Yeah, but then he ends up coming back to Earth and meets his daughter and he's fine and whatever, whatever. But I hear what you're saying.
So it was almost Interstellar and the score is amazing and the story is amazing. But in the end, I've just decided like Inception could have won an Oscar for Best Picture in my opinion.
Yeah, probably should have. Yeah.
It really could have and it really should have. And think of when it was released. 10 plus years ago.
More than that,
he made that movie. Like technology's come along so much more than then. So I'm so proud of Oppenheimer, the whole production, the whole team. He finally got his dues, but it kind of reminded me of how the Oscars don't really make sense.
They don't, not at all.
Because they don't actually like purely go on merit. It's all like a bit like, okay, they've earned it now. Just like the way Leo won for The Revenant. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not an amazing film, but I feel like Leo had so many good films.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that Christian Bale has not won Best Actor. Anyway. Do I think that Christopher Nolan deserves $100 million? Do you know what? If he hit the targets and he pulled in the numbers, give the man his flowers, give the man his coin.
I mean, it does seem obscene, but think about it. This is an idea that he sat down, thought about, was all in his head. Helped with a co-writer, wrote it down, coalesced millions of dollars to get people to sit around, film it. I've been on film sets. It's a massive endeavor. Mm. Then it turns into a project that me and you can enjoy and millions of other people have enjoyed and we paid good money to go see it. Yeah, why not? If we say he doesn't deserve $100 million, we're basically saying the studio deserves to keep more of the money. That's either the artist, the people that create the project get the money, or the capitalists, capital allocators get the money. And I prefer it that it goes to the artists.
Here's an interesting thought experiment. Who has added more value to the world? Adam Newman of WeWork?
Hold on, okay. Adam Newman of WeWork or who?
Or Christopher Nolan.
Of course Christopher Nolan.
Okay, because I'm saying that because think of how many founders,
it's true.
Absolute chancers, have raised far more money than that, managed to actually cash out by like investing again, selling on secondary markets. Yeah. For like ultimately a sham software product that like people don't even actually need, that wasn't actually revolutionary, that didn't really disrupt anything. And they're like lying on a beach in Bali, put all their money in an offshore account. No one's even hearing about them anymore. Meanwhile, Christopher Nolan's movies will like endure for a time. And you know, at the end of the day, no one likes to read a history book.
100%.
No one really wants to learn, but you can sit and watch a movie and learn the other way. And you know, in a time of increased anti-Semitism, but yes, of course, increased Islamophobia as well. It was also nice to be reminded of the contributions that Jewish people made to science.
Save the world. Yeah. I mean, Adam Newman walked away with $1 billion for a failed company. So,
see,
and you know, Nolan's probably made $100 million and you know,
and he's earned his flowers because guy's been in the game for a time. Yeah.
But also you gotta realize the amount of people who are not like cinephiles who will come to me and say like, oh, there's a new Nolan movie. So he kind of is saving the industry or helping to save cinema as an art form, because that money trickles down to the studios. They can afford to pay money for new films or, you know, lesser known people, and that saves the industry. Do you know what I mean? So it's definitely, definitely Nolan.
The next thing I'll say is big risk, big reward. And I think there are a lot of analogies between creating a startup and creating a big production like that, because you've got to fundraise, you got to pitch, you got to build a team, you got to like launch a product. Yes. So yeah, I mean, yeah.
I think where it gets difficult is when you look at, you know, the writer strike, where the rank and file actors and the rank and file writers probably don't get paid anywhere near as much. And then obviously you get one or two people making an obscene amount of money. That's probably where the kind of unfairness is. So I've got to give a shout out to the writers and actors who have gone on strikes to get their fair living wage type thing. You know what, man? Let's quickly talk about Diddy, because Diddy's been hemmed up again and it's a bit of a mess. There's been another lawsuit, another allegation against him. A male producer. Obviously, trigger warning. Obviously, we're going to talk about sexual abuse here. But Diddy's been accused of sexual assault with a male producer, forcing that male producer to watch him have sex. All sorts of, you know, crazy stuff. This is on top of the Cassie lawsuit, where there was a lot of crazy stuff alleged against him, which he then settled and paid out. Is hip hop having its reckoning moment? Because you know when Me Too happened, it was almost a thing where hip hop never really kind of caught any strays, even though the music has been hella misogynistic, the music has been mad over the years, but we never knew really and truly what's going on behind the scenes with some of these movers and shakers. And, you know, someone like Diddy, he's had a lot of power for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, in the Cassie lawsuit, it was alleged that he blew up Kid Cudi's car. It was alleged that Kid Cudi was having was starting to date Cassie, and that mysteriously his car blew up.
Jesus.
And supposedly this was a known thing within the industry. Exactly. So Diddy, don't come for me. Don't blow up my car after this. But
it's very worrying and it's really disturbing. We see in so many different areas of society powerful men abusing their power. It's not just men, powerful women too. But yes, specifically here in the case of Diddy, I'm not going to lie, I believe it. There's no smoke without fire, and power corrupts. How old is that quote? That quote is like 2,000 years old.
Yeah.
Power corrupts. And I think what often happens is when you become a powerful person, you're surrounded by sycophants, you're surrounded by yes people. And even if those people have a moral compass, they're not going to enforce it around you because you pay their checks.
Yeah.
You pay their salary. So, you know, why is it that, you know, the world is now catching up with hip hop? I also think that like, Black women are becoming more empowered, right? Through our own education, through our own awareness, through the platforms that we build, through the communities that we build, we fear less that speaking up against these things, that standing up for things. And I think that that is a big part of this too. So yeah, I'd be scared. And this is the thing, right? I have this conversation a lot of time with like the training that I do where men come up to me and they're like, so what? I can't even make a joke anymore, or I can't even like relax around people anymore. And I was like, if you're worried that the way that you relax around people is going to get you in trouble with HR.
Yeah, find a different way to relax, basically.
Find a different way to relax. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or like, if you're worried that the jokes that you make are going to get you trouble with HR, that niggle of concern, if you peel it back, peel it back, peel it back, is an admission of your own lack of propriety.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like deep, deep down, you know it's wrong, but you don't want to accept that it's wrong. And I think what happens a lot of the time is like these people know what they're doing is wrong. That's why it's happening behind closed doors. That's why it's not happening on an IG live. They know it's wrong. They know it's messed up. They're doing it anyway because they can. But my favorite mantra at the moment is just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Techish is sponsored by Intuit, a global technology platform that serves millions of customers worldwide with TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. They are now hiring for a variety of tech and non-tech roles across all products and regions. At Intuit, you'll be part of a team that emphasizes the importance of diverse voices to drive innovation and power and prosperity for all. Check out Intuit's career opportunities waiting for you. Visit intuit.com/pocket. That's intuit.com/pocket. Link in the show notes. Back to our tech bag. There's been a new tool that's been released. It's called Devon. It's an AI tool that basically is set up to replace software engineers.
Oh, watch out.
So a lot of software engineers are absolutely spooked, shook, and because they've run the demos and it looks pretty powerful. You can give it a task, it'll break down the task of what it needs to do, and then it'll go and do it. Basically, it's got a debugger tool, it's got a code text tool, and it can write code, it can fix it, it can debug, it can whatever. Supposedly it's gone on Upwork and already done projects, you know, unbeknowingly to the person who paid for it.
Amazing.
Whatever. I gotta say something, man, because I think as software engineers, as developers, like, we have cheered on the automation of so many roles. Oh, you're a lawyer? We're going to automate that. Oh, you're a taxi cab, you know, middleman? We're going to automate your role. And we've been like, woo, equity, my shares are vesting in my Uber and my Airbnb shares and this and that. And now that we're on the end of it, guys, let's slow down. Slow down, please. What are we doing? Yeah, too late. Like, you can't slow the progress. It is what it is. And I don't know if software engineering as a role will be automated away completely. It probably will become so much more easier to build stuff that eventually it probably won't be this prestigious, well-paid job. Because you got to talk about during the kind of 0% interest rate era, people were getting paid like $300,000, $200,000 coming out of uni, out of college.
Wild.
Oh, I just graduated Stanford CS. $250
a lot of that was
supply and
demand as well, though.
That's what I'm saying.
There was a bottleneck.
Exactly.
And now it's gone the other way.
It's an oversupply, and it's becoming easier. So it'll be even more of an oversupply. You know, somebody who uses products, it's a win in the sense that it will become much more easier for people who have ideas in their head to make them.
Yeah.
I was talking about this with a friend of mine, actually. He was learning to produce music, and he was like, he was shocked how easy it was. It was a lot of drag and drop tools.
Oh my gosh, I've got Ableton Note on my phone.
Exactly. And he said, is that similar?
It's like music production software. Yeah, just be making beats.
Yeah. Then he also said there was an app where you could hum it, and it would kind of give you an approximation of like what the beat you're trying to make is. And I realized that for a lot of time, we've basically had, people have had ideas. In order to make those ideas, they've had to know certain tools or pay somebody who knows how to make those tools. Yeah. And those people have made a lot of money. Yes, knowledge gap. So the people have had a lot of money. But what happens in 10 years' time or 5 years' time when I have an idea for an app and I can just say, I want an app to do this, do that, do this, boom, boom, and it comes to existence. I want the song to sound like this, fix it, tweak it, I've got a song. The gap between creativity and execution is now non-existent. It can happen instantaneously.
Yeah.
So that is actually a good thing for humanity. But definitely, we are in a situation where a lot of people are going to get hurt because of that transition. Because a lot of people have made their money in being the middleman. Oh, I know how to use the tools. You don't know how to use the tools.
Yeah.
I'm an accountant. I know how to be an accountant. You don't know how to be an accountant. Pay me £500 an hour or $500 an hour.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Well, what it takes to be a specialist now is just going to, like, it's just going to up the game. I think it's like win-win for everyone. Like, if you're truly a specialist, you need to add value in a way that I cannot do it.
Yeah.
And people making more things is only going to make society better. Not all of it's going to be great. Fine. We're probably going to have to get better at filtering. But I think it's exciting. I think it's amazing. Yeah,
because think about this. Like, maybe 10 years ago, let's say you're a middle-aged single mother, just like my mom was, working in retail, stacking shelves, and you're frustrated by the software that you use to basically check what's in stock. You're like, oh, this is the mistakes here. She would have, if she thought, I've got a great idea for a software app, she would never be able to do it because she would have to go and find somebody, pay them a bunch of money. She wouldn't even have the knowledge to even know this is what I'm trying to do, what I'm even asking for. She couldn't do it. Now, in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, 5 years' time, somebody could get their phone, open a little voice app. Oh, can you build me an app that does X, Y, Z, that tracks this? I want it to track that. All of a sudden, now you've got an app on your pocket, download it onto your own iPhone, and you can get moving. That to me is an exciting world. Yeah. I can't lie. That is an exciting world, but it's a scary ass world for a lot of people because they've built their whole career on, like I said, filling that knowledge gap. Me too. I've been a developer for many, many years. I'm now an employer. So obviously now I'm probably less, you know, scared by it, but I got to own my incentive. I'll be honest with you. But it's also just like, I don't know.
Maybe
scary
we're
world.
Finally actually really in Web3, and I don't just mean purely like in terms of like crypto and things like that, but actually like in a new dawn of the internet. Two things came to mind. The origins of coding. It started as a secretarial task, right?
Yeah.
Like if you watch movies like Hidden Figures, like, you know, you're reminded of like the mid-century computers were like an extension of a typewriter and coding was used for repetitive tasks. It wasn't valued by men, so women had to do it. As we approach the end of the century, the mindset and perspective changed and people actively pushed women out as they found ways to like use software to create, you know, huge profits. Now we're coming around full circle again where it's like, actually, this is a task that we can automate. But what I also think is really interesting is like, I remember when I got the internet at home, aging myself now, dial-up modem back in the day, the internet was this wild, wild west. You could create sites. I used to make sites on GeoCities and Homestead. The idea of building a website as like an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old was like not alien. But then the internet changed so much over the next 20 years. It became so much more closed. Kids weren't building sites. They were just interacting with them. And hopefully we can go back to that early days, that new frontier where people are just constantly making and constantly building, because that for me is so exciting. I loved the early internet. It was so weird. It was also scary, but it was exciting.
So I've got an announcement to make. I am now a VC scout.
After spending
years of cussing out VCs, I am now everything I've hated, and I'm joking. So I got approached by Zeal Capital, which is like a VC firm in the US. They are teamed up with Barclays and they raised a $50 million fund to kind of back black founders.
Very
so they got a scout program and I'm the only like UK based scout, but they got 10 or 12 of us. So I can write checks up to 25K per founder. Okay. And yeah, look into back startups that are black led.
Let me pitch you, man.
We're trying to do an episode of Shark Tank, Black Tank. Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's just it's a new chapter for me. I'm excited.
Congratulations. This is an exciting opportunity. I mean, to be selected as one of the 12 out of what I'm sure were many, many applications is absolutely dope. But with the platform you've built with people of color in tech, I feel like you're in prime position to get deal flow.
Yeah.
You always have your finger on the pulse of like what's happening as far as like new innovations, new startups. So I'm excited.
I'm excited too, but the inbound is wild. We've had like, I mean, by the time this comes out, it'll probably be double.
At least 10 emails are from
me. I've had like 400 submissions to like the form I said to like, if you're interested.
Tell me your thesis.
So I haven't necessarily got a thesis per se. It's more about what I don't like.
Okay, tell me what things that I don't like.
What I don't tend to, well, there's thesis in terms of like industry, and there's thesis in terms of like what I look for the kind of team and what they've done so far. I don't like it if you've basically got no money, no revenue, because I'm kind of like, how hard is it to get $1 in revenue? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's going to help you rule out a lot of those.
Exactly, yeah. So my form now, initially I never had that in my form, but then I asked like, do you have revenue? And if you do have revenue, how much is it in monthly increments? So are you making 10K a month, less than 5K a month, 0K a month kind of thing? And yeah, it's definitely a good filtering factor. I'm not saying you have to have a lot of money in revenue, but like to have some money tells me that you're a builder, you're a hustler, like, and you're actually very practical. Nice. Because I'm not writing you $1 million check. So whatever I give you has to basically like, you know, be a boost, but it can't be, you're not going to live on it. You need to be able to make money. So in terms of industry and thesis, I'm not a big fan of marketplaces. I'll be honest with you.
Too hard to crack.
You need an insane amount of revenue, insane amount of scale, sorry, to like make that work.
I was going
to
say, you need to build demand and supply at the same time.
So hard.
I would never recommend someone do a marketplace business.
Yeah. Ironically, I do run one with Pocket Jobs and it's very difficult.
Yeah.
And then I'm not a big fan of social products. I'll be honest with you. Another super hard one.
That's one of my niches.
Social. It's so hard though.
Yeah. But
how many social products have worked in the last like, however many years, like I might be for it.
Nikita Beer has sold like 3.
Yeah, but apart from him.
Okay.
And when I say work, I mean in a sense that like he bootstrapped all those, by the way. So how many of those have reached like, you know, what in terms of like gone public or exited for a giant amount? Thinking,
Gumroad is a marketplace business and that's done really well.
Yeah, Gumroad has done well. But Gumroad, he actually bought out his investors because it wasn't giving them VC returns after like a certain amount of time. So he bootstrapped it, bought back the ownership. It's just very difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying
I want to give the odds. Unicorn.
I'm trying to give myself the higher odds of success in it. So I like B2B. I like SaaS. I like AI. I like, those things.
Life sciences?
Yeah. Anything? I like boring biotech. Deep tech. I'll be honest with you. This is the thing that is very, very dread. And I probably will back some companies doing stuff like this. But a lot of, you know, black founders, we do tend to work in stuff to do with like, either like B2C consumer, skincare, hair, which makes sense. Because obviously addressing gaps in the market. Yeah. But it's like, I've had 2 or 3 people doing the exact same idea come to me. Oh, and I'm like,
I
need to join forces, or you know, somebody needs to demonstrate that they are well ahead by showing like, oh, I've got this amount of revenue kind of thing.
Dating
like,
app. What about dating apps?
No, I'm not for that either. Because to be honest, you know how competitive it is that Tinder basically buys up every single dating app.
There you go. You got an exit plan.
I know, but sometimes they also crush you. So there's the app Muzmatch, which basically is a dating app for Muslims. I think they've had to rebrand to just Muz because Match.com, which owns Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, sued them to oblivion because you can't use the word match in the thing. So it's a very cutthroat space. Do you know what I'm saying?
D2C?
D2C, no. Is an e-commerce? No, not really.
Fair.
Very difficult because I think with D2C, it's like you rely so much on the distribution on like Facebook and Instagram. And if those numbers don't add up, so let's say it's now costing you $10 to acquire a customer, all of a sudden now you're not profitable. You know what I mean? So D2C is too difficult.
How do you suppose someone that's going for like a deep tech solution, something that requires a lot of R&D, generate revenue?
That's probably where I would be like, I understand why you haven't generated revenue yet, because you're working on something that is like very technically challenging and that itself is an innovation that will be thing. But most of us are not doing that. Most of us are building on existing technologies, building SaaS on existing, you know, platforms and whatever. Maybe even using no code tools, you can find some way to make money. I'm not saying that all the stuff that I said doesn't mean I'm against any of the other stuff that I said I don't like. If you come with a pitch that's great, I might, you know, still might do it. And also, to be fair, there are other scouts in the program.
Yeah.
So like it. So it's not just me in it. You get what I'm saying? There's 10 other scouts. There's actually also the main VC firm, Zeal. So if you want to pitch to them, you can too. I'm just saying from my perspective, this is what I'm trying to do basically.
That's really interesting. So as you know, I'm also a VC scout with Ada Ventures. And I actually really love community businesses. As far as my own personal investments, my own angel investments, that's sort of like what I lean towards. Because for me, it's like partly what I hope will be commercially successful, but it's also mostly like what I just want to exist in the world.
Yeah.
And businesses that are creating a future I really want to live in. I'm really excited about. But, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of founders who are like listening to this and thinking, wow, okay, Michael Abadesi, let me pitch them my startup. If you cannot answer these three questions like compellingly, then you need to go back to the drawing board and think about it. And like the first one is like, why you? Why are you the person that has to work on this business? Why are you the best person to, you know, run a media company, people of color and tech? Why am I the best person to run an education company, Hustle Crew? Secondly, like, why this version of the solution, you know, training, articles, whatever it is, like, why is this the product? Why does this make sense? And then finally, like, why now?
Yeah, why now?
Why is now the time for you to be building the solution to this problem? And if you can't come up with three compelling answers to those questions, you're going to struggle to pitch.
Yeah. So why now? For example, when Uber would pitch, why now for them would have been, we now have these smartphones in our hands. We have GPS. Whereas maybe 10 years before that, we couldn't do Uber. True. So that's what a why now is. It can be what technical changes, what societal changes have happened that means that now's the right time for this idea, basically. Just to clarify that, because why now can be quite confusing. I used to find that confusing. The other thing is also just traction. It doesn't have to be revenue, to be fair. Do you have users? Basically, when people ask you for traction, it's like, yo, can you demonstrate that anybody wants this?
Yeah. Who cares about
this? Who cares about this? Yeah. Because you
who's
could be
reading your newsletter, who's following
who cares? Social, like, who's coming show me that someone cares. Don't come to me thinking, it's almost like I remember hearing a radio DJ say, don't come to me with your song thinking I'm going to make your song hot. As in like, don't come to me, oh, please like play my song on the radio and make my song. No, no, no. If you've got some heat, I might play your song. People are resonating with it in the club. All right, cool. We'll play it. That's kind of what an investor is. Show some heat. Do you know what I'm saying? The other thing that was interesting with this situation, like, because I've had approaches from other VC firms, and the reason why I did this one, obviously, it's helping the, you know, black founders. So that's box tick number one. Second box tick was also the structure. So they set it up in a way where, you know, the scouts get carry. So we get, so if it does well, we do well. And I found that a lot of the other programs were very much just like pat on the head. Yeah, we'll give you, we'll give you a nice little, you know, whatever, whatever. If you find us a good investment, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, man, I'm putting, and not just even the scout structure, even other VC firms have asked me to mentor their startups.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so hold on, you want me to mentor your startups, make them more likely to succeed, then when they exit for 100 billion, I get nothing?
Yeah.
I was like, get the hell out of here, man. Yeah. So I waited for the right opportunity, and I hopefully this is the one that that works out, basically. So I'll have the link in the show
notes.
Don't
forget us when you're a billionaire, bro.
Listen, if you've got the next Uber, come holler at your boy. You know what I'm saying? I'll give some equity to Abadesi just to come help on the board. And then, yeah, but link in the show notes if you want to apply and submit your startup. And yeah. We'll look forward to that.
Let's talk about Ye's Super Bowl ad. Is Ye a marketing genius?
So basically, he did some cheap-ass Super Bowl ad on his smartphone, the FaceTime ad, basically.
Did make me want to get a grill, though.
Yeah, you know what? So the cost of the ad was $7 million.
And the ad spot.
The ad spot, yeah. And then it worked because I believe in yin and yang. So when something, when everyone is zigging, exactly. When everybody is zigging, you should zag. So the fact is, the entire probably slate of adverts was super well produced, super high end, super expensive. And then you just notice the person who does the one that's completely opposite. Let's say everyone does this and it became a trend. It wouldn't work as well. No. It's the fact that he zigged when everybody was zagging. He was like, oh wow. And it almost was like a TikTok video.
Yeah, it was.
So he just basically went on there and said, listen, yo, buy, go to ye.com or yeezy.com, blah, blah, blah. And supposedly, you know, the revenue was 20 mil from that one advert alone, supposedly. So it works. Listen, man, yeah, he's a genius. He's got a lot of great insights. He's just got a lot of bad ones too, I'll be honest with you. And what depressed me recently is that he fired somebody recently who leaked his recent album, and the letter was signed by Milo Yiannopoulos. Do you know who Milo Yiannopoulos is?
No. Oh, I do.
Milo Yiannopoulos was down as chief of staff, the blonde-haired, basically alt-right, neo-Nazi, basically, type
dude. I remember
that guy. Yeah, who's been a... you know, linked with alt-right people, Breitbart. Yeah. He's working with Kanye. Whatever. It's like, bro, could you not have aligned the evil Avengers?
He's
like, what are you trying to do?
Politics, though. Like, he's he's very much, he's in his own plane of reality. He did apologize to the Jewish community for his anti-Semitic comments, by the way.
He'll probably go back on it next week, to be honest. He's that kind of person.
He's an interesting person. Let's see how history judges him. I honestly think people will like write dissertations about him in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I think you can. Listen, what is the impact on, you know, mental health, on celebrities, you know, bipolar potentially, his impact on culture. Yeah, you could write a book on
he's
Kanye.
He's beyond black.
I'm surprised
though.
There hasn't been a book on Kanye
he's
already.
He's beyond black.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he wants to be seen, like, beyond.
I think he wants to be seen as beyond black. So he's like, he's basically on that, I'm not black, I'm OJ, which is what Jay-Z took the piss out of on that song. Because that was a quote from OJ, that I'm not black, I'm OJ. Basically, listen, don't put me in that box. Mm. Problem with Kanye is that when he wants to, when he's struggling, he'll jump into that black box. Help me, pro-black, yeah, for the community, da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden, he'll be like, I don't see race or slavery as a choice. Anyways, let's wrap it up. That's been this week's episode of Techish. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate you listening.
Let's get Ye on the show. Let him answer for himself.
Okay, imagine we got Ye and Diddy on the show. That'll be the worst show ever. Ye and Diddy.
I would like insist on having security.
Yeah, for real, me too. check our car. Okay, at Techish Pod on Instagram, at Techish Pod on Twitter, at Techish Pod on YouTube. Leave a review and we'll catch you next week. Peace.
Bye.